Well, hey there, come on in. We're just about to start. Welcome to My Wife the Dietitian, a fun weekly podcast about nutrition and healthy lifestyle. I'm Rob, and together with my wife Sandra, we invite you to join us on this informative and entertaining journey through the complex world of healthy eating.
Join us each week as we strive to help you with transforming your overall health and relationship with food through up-to-date, evidence-based nutrition information. The Nutrigenomics Kitchen is a groundbreaking resource book written by Amanda Archibald, a dietitian who's a pioneer in the field of nutrigenomics. Today, we learn all about the relationship between our genes and the food we eat and how to put it into practice in your kitchen for your best health.
I like to say genomics takes the guesswork out of what's wrong and gives us a much better blueprint for how to help you optimize so that you can watch those sunrises and sunsets without medication.
Learn which foods have the most nutritional bang for your buck, how to send your body's natural antioxidant response into overdrive, and the hands-on practical facts about helping your food work best for you.
Enjoying the show? You can help others find it and enjoy it too by giving us a 5-star rating or review. If you feel like reaching out to us with a question or comment, you can send us an email at mywifetherd@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit our website at mywifethedietitian.com, as well as our social media pages. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Enjoy the show. Welcome to My Wife the Dietitian. Hello, Sandra.
Hello, Rob.
How are you today?
I'm really excited about interviewing our guest today.
Yes, I know.
Amanda Archibald, dietitian. She's the founder of the Genomic Kitchen, a pioneering consultancy online education program and nutrition counseling services that make optimal health accessible through the merging of genomic and nutrition science with food, with culinary arts.
This stuff is fascinating. That's the only word I can use to describe it. And you'll hear me say it a whole bunch of times through this episode, but it really is fascinating. It's just like this really cutting edge science, but gives us a practical answer that we can use to help ourselves. It's awesome stuff.
Oh yeah. And I've been in some of her hands-on workshops, well, online, her culinary masterclasses, and it really does. It helps you make that real world connection between our food and our genes and how to turn some genes on and off with certain foods that we eat. And it's so interesting. Like, the conversation is amazing.
Yeah. It'll be neat to see where this field is, you know, down the road in the future. I think it's just the tip of the iceberg right now. So like I said, it's a fascinating interview. It's a fascinating topic, and Amanda's a lot of fun to listen to. She really knows her stuff. So, encourage you to stick around and listen and learn. This is just such cool stuff. So stick around and enjoy.
Thanks, Amanda, for being here today. I've followed your career for so many years, and I read your book, The Genomic Kitchen, and I did a masterclass, a culinary masterclass with you, and I'm really excited that you're with us. And can you tell us a bit about yourself and who you are, what you do, and who you help in your work?
Yeah, thanks for letting me be a guest here, Sandra. And we just were chit-chatting about who we are and where we live and all that wonderful stuff. So my name's Amanda Archibald. I was raised in Europe. So if any of you are wondering about my accent, no, I'm not Australian or South African, although I've been to both countries and work in both countries. It's amazing, amazing places. But I live in Western Colorado. And as we were just chatting, I'm very close to our big national parks here. So Canyonlands, Arches. So beautiful part of the country. And I can step out and also see the San Juan Mountains. So nice. I'm very proud. Yeah, I'm proud of where I love where I live. And I think that's part of what makes life great when you really love where you live.
Absolutely.
Even if you're having a down day, right? You can just get out and be inspired and reset. So
with nature. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Mother Earth is very giving, right? And very forgiving. And so we are leave such harried, challenging lives that are only going faster and faster. So that nature piece is so important. So anyway, what I do, I'm trained as a dietitian. That wasn't my original training in Europe. I have a degree in French, German, and linguistics. So I was more in that space. Oh. But when I came to live in the United States, I switched. We won't tell the story, but I did switch to nutrition science, became a dietitian, and did not enjoy my training. I felt it didn't connect me to what I knew growing up in Europe, that food is the center of our plate, it's the center of our life, is what unites people, it's what creates community, it's what induces conviviality, right? And so I spent quite a long time trying to figure out, well, you know, what do I do with this degree? And a few years went by, and first of all, I knew that the culinary part of our work is, to me, the most important, is what translates information to the plate. Our bodies respond. But so the culinary piece is a space I've been in for quite some time, but my expertise is in genomics, which is how the genes, which are how our genomics, let's go back. So genomics is the science of the genome, which is the composite of all our genes. And our genes are what directs traffic in the body. They provide the recipe for building the proteins, which are the structural component of the body, and the movers and shakers. So basically, I look at the blueprint of how you built and figure out where there's efficiencies or inefficiencies and help redirect traffic in your body so that you can live your best life and increase and love your health span and, you know, watch those sunrises later on in life and sunsets. So long explanation.
No, that's good. Rob, I've told Rob this many times. He's heard me say this. And we actually had a recent guest, Dr. Wesley McWhorter. And I mentioned to him, food is the language of nutrition. And that's just what you were saying. It's just like mm-hmm. how you, like, it's such an interesting thing because as dietitians, you know, learning about nutrition and nutrients and macronutrients and vitamins and minerals and fiber and all that, we don't talk about food. And I mean, we should be talking more about food, and I think more of us are, but it should be an integral part of the education. I know we do food services and we do, you know, all that in our internship, but the practicality of making vegetables and fruits taste better and, you know, help with activating the bioactives so that we can have better health outcomes with eating more fruits and vegetables. And we know that people are not getting enough vegetables and fruits. Like, that's what the data shows us. I read that in your book this morning. I'm like, wow, we are so falling short of vegetables and fruits, hey?
Yeah, it's, and there are so many reasons for that. You know, we can unpack that a lot. There's economic reasons, there's nature versus nurture, there's genetic reasons, there's food deaths, there's accessibility. And I think on my Facebook yesterday, there's also sheer pressure to conform in so many different ways, whether it's how many friends you have, or whether you're going to the right yoga class, or whether you're doing enough forms of fitness. I think with food, we talk a lot about shaming, but there's a lot of shaming about kind of complying with eating enough fruits and vegetables, and you're falling off if you don't have any, and on and on and on. So there's a lot to unpack mm-hmm. around the why that I think is very important.
I love that.
I think a point you made, Amanda, about growing up in Europe too. I think there's a huge difference culturally in how we view food. And, mm-hmm. you know, like in Europe, like you said, it's a big part of your culture, essentially, like loving food and eating and, you know, appreciating everything that's on your plate, you know, mm-hmm. and North America, it's kind of that drive-through mentality, you know, like I got to eat to survive so I can get to my job and work and make money to pay for my big house and my American dream and all that. It's a little bit different. Look at food and how we approach it, and therefore our health kind of suffers as well, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting. I was chit-chatting with one of my colleagues, just messaging back and forth, and she'd posted something about Walter Longo's work, which we're probably all familiar with. He's really the brilliant mind behind the fasting mimicking diet and Prolon, which some of your, you know, listeners may be familiar with. And so what this all fits into is, you know, his work has really shown that when we are able to fast, A-I-E, you know, stop eating for 12 hours, maybe our body has the opportunity to reset, right? It can, that process induces autophagy that helps us recycle and clean out our cells. So this we know, but, you know, so my colleague and I were talking about his work, and he's definitely more of a lower protein ideator. And I think she was saying that in some of his more recent work, he's saying, you know, don't miss breakfast. You're better off to fast later in the day. And I said, so I came back. I said, you know, it's so interesting because he is from Italy, right? And I said, in Italy, France, Greece, I grew up in Europe, and I'm trying to think, Spain. It's interesting that this is a work from an Italian, where Italians eat very, very little for breakfast, but there is no way that you're going to take away their aperitivo, right, and their later dinners. I mean, you walk around in Spain, you can't get a reservation at 6 or 7 o'clock. You know, we're out, you know, at 10 or 11, 12, 1 in the morning. And it really is that way. And so I said, gosh, science is really confusing. Are we now squashing science into a box that fits with our mentality in North America, where the longevity that is associated, you know, with Greece and Spain, there are hotspots all over the world, but particularly in and Greece as well, these people are not going to fast, you know, because we are eating fantastic food at 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night. So it's interesting to your point, Rob, that, you know, we do grow up very much with food center of our lives in Europe. And we don't sit around worrying about it either.
Yeah, exactly. No,
exactly. And Amanda, I think one part too that you mentioned is like the whole idea of, I think there's a lot of isolation and people eating, like if you're eating late at night in North America, you're probably like sitting on the couch watching Netflix, or, you know, you might, it's just a different eating experience than going out for an Italian restaurant at 10 PM at night with your, you know, you're socializing, you've got community, you're laughing, you're, you know, it's a different,
it's very true. And what is interesting is that I think of like being in Greece or in Italy, like Sunday mornings, to your point about socializing, and this definitely in Greece and Italy, this is family time. This is when we walk with our family and we sit out in the brasseries or the restaurants, and it's a big table, right? And there are no phones on the table, because this is a time where we're honoring, you know, our elders, and we're with family. Has that changed? When I was last in Greece, it had not. I'll let you know about Spain later this year, but it's conviviality and the respect, and food is the great uniter, right? So you're right that even in North America, we can be sitting around and eating, watching Netflix and looking at our phones at the same time, and we're losing the relevance of food. Right. And the power of what it does. So here we are waxing poetically. But, you know, science can be confusing. It really was. It really did make me think, wait, are we shrink wrapping science to make us feel better in North America? Because that would be a strange thing for certain populations in Europe to say, well, you got to drink this stuff, which is great. You know, it's great. Prolon is from Walter Longo, is it's an amazing product. It does really help a lot of people. I'm just wondering if the elders would be like, we're going to take like 4 days off to reset our genes in the middle of the wine harvest. I don't think so.
Yeah, right.
Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, no, totally. Well, that's actually part of what I wanted to ask, because doing that culinary masterclass with you a couple months ago was so amazing. And there was a chef who was like using different elements in the food to bring out like the bioactives. So like, that's what I was really like taken with. I thought this is so practical, and people in North America, like our listeners who are cooking in their own kitchen, can use certain things that they know it's going to be helpful. Like, are there some, I don't know, elements in our vegetables and fruits that are really important for our health, and what we can do to make them more nutritious in a way?
Yeah. So you probably was at the masterclass with my partner, Kate, in the UK.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. 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 So we work together, and she is a trained chef. She trained in Ireland. She's also an amazing clinician, by the way, but we do work together. So yes, let's not over philosophize here that fruits and vegetables are instrumental to our health, because what they contain is probably the most amount of information that our food recognizes to function. So what does that mean? Yes, they've got all your vitamins and minerals, right? Yes, they're a great source of fiber. Sometimes it depends on the fruit or vegetable and the part you're eating, which is really interesting as to where you get the most benefit. But we don't need to shame ourselves into thinking, well, gosh, if I don't eat the radish leaves, I'm not going to get any benefit out of the radishes, right? So that's why I'm coming around with food shaming. Say it all matters. It all contributes to you, right? So what my colleague, Kate, would have probably been showing is how we work with cruciferous vegetables. So these are your cabbage, your kale, your bok choy. Let's think of some others, arugula or rocket. You may call it rocket in Canada. Radish.
Broccoli. No, the rocket is arugula, Rob. Arugula.
Rocket is arugula. Yes.
No,
right?
No. I mean, but cruciferous. Broccoli is cruciferous, right?
Yeah, broccoli. But what all the ones I'm naming are all cruciferous, including, now we call it rutabaga in the US. So you may call it swede. I grew up in the UK. So swede is rutabaga. Turnips, turnip leaves or turnip greens, collard greens. All of these are cruciferous vegetables. And what is incredible about cruciferous vegetables is not only they're in their own right, they are robust, they're full of vitamins and minerals, but when we prepare them in a certain way, in other words, when we cut them, so we're chiffonading or we're shredding cabbage, we actually facilitate a reaction. It's a chemical reaction whereby a molecule, it's a family of molecules in those cruciferous vegetables, we know them as glucosinolates, so we'll just keep it at that, right? Because there's siblings in there. But the glucosinolates, when we cut them or when we chew them, but let's stick to cutting or prepping or tearing them, the glucosinolates will actually react with a resident enzyme. So it's a mover and shaker. So these two kind of like fusion, like an atomic reaction, they come together and they produce something called a bioactive. So it's another molecule. You may know it as a phytonutrient or phytochemical. So we produce this like third party product, sulforaphane. And sulforaphane is probably, to me, one of the most brilliant discoveries in science, because in nutrition science, because what that then does is it can trigger genes to kind of get out of bed, shake themselves off and do their work. So I know, right?
That is cool.
So it's like, get out of bed. It's like, okay, like, right. We've got sulforaphane is on stage. Let's do some acting. And so what, so this is, I know, this is a field. See, I said, I talked about genomics. So this is the subclass. So it's a subfield of genomics called nutrigenomics. And nutrigenomics is how we can look in food and prepare food in ways that we can get food to talk to genes. So food can talk to genes in a number of different ways, but sulforaphane can activate a number of genes that help the body produce its own antioxidants. So this is brilliant. So what you're doing with food is, yes, it brings information into the body, but now we can know we can use food to activate processes in the body depending on what we want them to do. So we want to be able to produce our own antioxidants, right? Because they are our defense mechanism, one of our major defense mechanisms. But the sulforaphane can also activate, and I'm very simplifying the science, but it can activate genes that protect cell membranes, pretty important. But importantly, they can activate genes that help your body get rid of its trash. So we call that detoxification. Some people get all alarmed about that or think it's a fad. No, it's a process. But imagine that you now can look at food and say, what is it I want the body to do? Good, I want the body to remove the trash today. And you can do that and help it along very specifically by, you know, we call it self-signaling, by eating cruciferous vegetables to activate genes that say, oop, our job's trash, time to take out the trash. So we can now write recipes that target different pathways in our body, depending on what we want them to do. So that's nutrigenomics.
Oh, write recipes to target
different pathways.
Different pathways. Oh my
so
God.
I call it, Sandra, I call it, what's my why and where's my ROI? So the why is, what am I trying to achieve? I'm going to write a recipe. What am I trying to achieve? I want the body to take its trash out. So that's the why. And the ROI, which is, if I eat this, what return on ingestion, ROI, am I going to get? So my why is the one, my why for eating the cruciferous vegetables, I need to take the trash out. And the ROI is, I got the trash out of my body. Return on ingestion is, I cleaned out the trash so that, you know, I don't have stuff in my body floating around that can be injurious. It can injure cells, tissues, membranes, vasculature, my DNA. So the why, the ROI. That's my new thing.
I like it.
I love
That's
it.
Awesome.
That's awesome. What's my why? And what's my ROI? Ingestion.
When you look at your food, it's like, what's my why? Okay, I'm hungry, right? But if I eat this, what's the return on ingestion? And I think shifting the food conversation that people really connect to what food does is, I think, is really, really useful. We don't need to get hung up on it, but you know, thinking about food is more than, hey, I got my calcium today. It's like, well, what am I trying to achieve in my body if I eat this food? Is where I think that, there's a huge opportunity to help people reconnect, you know, mm-hmm. with what we're trying to do with food.
I say to Sandra a lot too, we measure our health by what the scale says and what the mirror, you know, reflects to us. And we don't think about what food does inside our body. And, you know, the health of, you know, what's going on inside. And so this is, this is interesting that just some of the concepts you're bringing up here, I sort of go right along with that. And, you know, it is more than just what the number on the scale is and how you look.
Well, 100%, because as we're finding in this environment, and maybe among your listeners, like you can be doing the healthiest things, you know, checking all the blocks, eating the right food, but the scale isn't shifting. Mm-hmm. And we in genetics can actually start to understand why that is happening and then re-steer food so that it helps kind of optimize how we're built, our biochemistry, so that even if the scale isn't shifting, we'll come back to that, we know that your body is operating at the highest efficiency, right? That's what we can see in genetics is what's the why, where are the inefficiencies? And you know, in the great thing about you bringing up the scale piece is, we kind of get judged by that scale, which is shaming. And our environment has a lot to, whether it's a physical or emotional environment, has a lot to do with what's happening on that scale. But genetics is fascinating that we can really start to help people understand why, you know, they can't look at themselves in the way they're built the same way as somebody else because their genes don't allow that. And that's okay. You know, or the way we structure what you're eating, how you're eating, the way we structure your exercise has to be very, very different because how your genes deal with food information or exercise information is completely different from somebody else's. And I think that allows us to help a lot of people get off the shame stage and understand they are okay. You are okay the way you are in this 21st century world.
Totally.
Yeah, because I mean, part of it is we're eating under the influence, like we're eating like mindlessly, we go through life on autopilot, we buy the same things at the grocery store all the time, we feed our kids the things that they enjoy, and they ask for, which might not be the healthiest thing for them. And it's just like, we're eating under the influence of our environment. And in terms of like, what's available, what's, as you said before, all those almost social determinants of health, the reasons that we choose the food we choose. And then if something happens, as Rob says, like if you end up with like a heart attack, or if a health event happens, then people look at nutrition and say, oh my gosh, what, you know, you are what you eat. And so then they start to look deeply into how they're eating and what they're eating. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're doing with the culinary cooking and food is the language of nutrition. It's bringing it back to the kitchen and like, how can we make food taste good, but also be really healthy for us and activate different genes that help with our hormone, like clearing our hormones from our system and, you know, or, you know, different things that are happening because of how the genes are coded and how this, the food and the different elements in the food can actually help with that. And it's just so, I love it. It's such cutting edge information. And it's like the science is changing so quickly. And I think this is just, there's new information all the time. And as you mentioned about the fasting, I mean, that is something that I hear all the time with clients is like, you know, basically don't eat breakfast. They don't eat breakfast and they, you know, say, well, I'm intermittent fasting. And it's like, okay, that's fine. Except you're not being successful with your health and you're not feeling good. You have brain fog. You're not losing weight like you want to. So, you know, maybe change things up, like maybe stop eating after dinner and then fast overnight and then eat breakfast, or, you know, different ways to help their whole system. And with nutrigenomics, to actually see that, okay, I need to, like, caffeine is something I can't clear because of my genes. So maybe I shouldn't have caffeine, or, you know, like different elements like that is just so interesting. And like, that's why I wanted to talk to you today, because just the pioneering work you are doing is just incredible.
Oh, you're so sweet. You know, thank you. It is exciting work, and what I love about it is it's exciting that we have the science now to look at how a human is built, like genes are how we are built. And so that may be a little bit esoteric for some of your listeners, but what I can see in my work is we can provide very empowering answers as to why somebody may have experienced certain health issues, or why their kids are different. Or we can now explain, you know, for some kids or some individuals, why they have a hard time focusing, you know, why their doctor said, we need medication to focus. Like, well, maybe we do and maybe we don't. But when we understand how genes are, you know, steering somebody's ability to focus or you know, have a lot of brain fog, when we can understand where that's coming from, a lot of the fixes are through food, because genes respond to information from food. And that's very empowering that we can help a lot of kids. And I'm talking about ADHD here, but, you know, we can also help a lot of individuals going through midlife changes as well, kind of have a better journey based on how their genes can be a little bit of, you know, troublemakers sometimes.
Amanda, can you explain the process just for people who don't quite understand how it works? We've been through it a little bit with other guests, and Sandra's done a bit of work on her own, so I kind of get it, but I could use an update with my knowledge a bit here too. So just explain the process of how people go through and get this kind of blueprint, I guess, if you want to call it, and how you use that.
Yeah, so what the majority, it depends on the country, but in North America, at least, the majority of genomic testing, so we probably want to differentiate genomics from genetics, but the majority of the testing we do, it's basically a cheek swab. It's a saliva swab, right? So you basically swab both of your cheeks for 30 seconds each, and then that swab, it's like a Q-tip, right? And it just goes back to the lab, and that's your DNA, that's your information, and they'll process that information. And what we get clinically is a report back that we can see how your genes are functioning. So I don't know if either of you have gone through one of these processes, but you'll get a report back and it looks like computer code, depending on the testing company. Right. The company I use it in the US, I'm using 3x4 and DNA Life, and I like both of these companies. So they'll send us back a report And we're able to look at genes, and these genes all fit into different pathways. So we can look at your predisposition to blood pressure, you know, hypertension or blood pressure issues. We can look at, very importantly, how your body handles different nutrients, meaning carbohydrates. Some of us can metabolize carbohydrates really well. Some of us are real slugs, you know, because we don't have genes that metabolize carbohydrates efficiently. So these, you could be an individual, or we can see individuals that may have a trending to higher insulin and probably disruption to blood sugars. Some individuals can eat saturated fat and others really need to steer clear. Some people can turn their appetite off. Some people can't. So you can see these reports really, what we get back is the blueprint of your genes in different processes and pathways in your body. And so from that, and based on talking with individuals, we're able to see what are the priorities and how would we organize information in terms of kind of nutrient or dietary recommendations, how they manage stress, how you we might need to reorganize your exercise regimes so that you can have a much better, more harmonious conversation with your genes. Because genes that are disruptive can really kind of stand in the way of you making health progress, to be honest with you. I mean, that's like a big lofty thing to say, but the be-all and end-all is genomics, to me, is probably one of the most important tools that we can have in a toolbox, because it is how you're built. And it takes away the guesswork of, well, let's run this test and let's run that test. Ooh, totally. Your vitamin D is low, right? Why is your vitamin D low? Why do you have, this is my big one, why do you have osteoporosis when your vitamin D levels are perfect? You know, and you're out in the sun. Why would you have that? Why is your cholesterol elevated when all your cholesterol genes suggest that you should be just fine? Why do you have heart disease when nobody else does? So genomics helps us look in the corner of the closet where the dust is and say, this is possibly the why. So now we know how to, not fix, I'm not a doctor, but now we know where to start to get your engine to run in a more finely tuned way. So I like to say genomics takes the guesswork out of what's wrong and gives us a much better blueprint for how to help you optimize so that you can watch those sunrises and sunsets without medication.
That's amazing. It reminds me of like years ago when cars became computerized and you take your car to the mechanic and he plugs this little computer in and it says what's wrong with the car. That's like, that's awesome. Like, you know, like it pinpoints exactly what the problem is and then they go and fix it instead of like spending hours under your hood, taking everything apart and wondering, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And, you know, in the meantime, your bill's getting higher and higher. But
Oh, we just keep bringing it back. And of course, you take it to the garage and like, well, I've got this sound. And anytime the mechanic gets in, it's like, well, I never heard the sound.
Oh, that happens all the time. Yeah.
It's so frustrating. But I think caution here that, you know, as you hear me say, genomics is a really, really important tool. It's not the only tool, right? So this is not the be-all and end-all. But I think, to me, you know, one of my major missions is to disrupt the medical record and democratize medicine so that everyone should have access to this really, really important information, because other than, you know, who your name is and what your social security number is or whatever, you know, where you were born, your blood type, right? The next thing should be, here's your genetics, because then there is no, this is how the person in front of you is built. Therefore, we can always refer back to explain inefficiencies, or have we dealt with this inefficiency with, you know, estrogen detoxification or tendency to elevated testosterone, which is important. You know, these things come up in midlife. And we can always refer back and say, oh, that's a benchmark. It may not give us an answer, but it is food for thought in how we might put together a protocol for someone, you know, whether it's medically or not. It's really important. So
is there any age requirement for doing these tests, or like, could they do it when you're born? Or do you need to,
I mean, that would be, you know, now there may be some scientists say, you know, wait a year or something. And some scientists will say, you know, with a child or a baby, I mean,
the ethics of it, right?
Sure.
Yeah. What's that now?
Yeah, we got like ethics. I mean, just thinking like they're an individual and at what point can they decide for themselves if they want that or not? And that whole discussion.
Genetics, right? So genetics, yeah. I said I want to come back to that. So genetics would be looking at what we call a single mutation. So this is like, you know, we're screening women, you know, during pregnancy, right, for genetic mutations, which could be life-threatening. So we can do some of those. That's what's often done, I think, depending on the country during pregnancy, right? So single mutations are life-threatening, things that can predispose someone to cystic fibrosis or, you know, some of these, or Lou Gehrig's or what have you. These are mutations. These are genes that often don't respond to medical intervention, right? So that's not the work I'm doing. When we're looking at these tests that I would be running or a clinician, these are genomic tests. So here we're looking at genes. It's certainly your genes, but we're looking at these slight variations that we call SNPs or single nucleotide polymorphisms. This form of genetics, if you will, or genomics is looking at variants that do respond to lifestyle intervention, to nutrition, to exercise, to stress management, et cetera. So with the testing that you're going to see from a clinician like myself is going to be a testing that we know we can do something about.
Right.
It's not that none of these things are life-threatening. So,
no, it's like action-oriented, eh?
Action-oriented, yes. Yeah. Yes. So that's what I'm talking about, being at the front of a medical record.
I love it. Oh, my gosh.
What
it's seriously cutting edge. Like, yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's amazing. So, like, for just people like that are cooking their meals and wanting to kind of make their meal healthier, do you have, you know, 5 take home messages, like not superfoods, but foods that can activate, have like bioactives or anything like that, that you can tell our listeners?
Yes. So some tips. So we already talked about the crucifers. Do not leave the grocery store without a crucifer. Okay. And it can something as simple as like a microgreen or sprouts. Now they can be expensive, so don't get hung up on that. If you can't do that, then get pre-packaged your rocket or arugula, you know, or those salad mixes that maybe have a kale or spinach in them, because you don't have to lovingly prepare them. You can shove them on top of stuff. You know, if you're making a stew or a soup, you don't have to be a master chef. This is like sprinkling information on your food. So don't get so like, oh my, I've got to so lovingly stand in front of a stove for hours. No, being able to choose food or pick food that you can add to, even if it's in a smoothie, would be number one. So crucifers, although salad or kind of spring mixes or whatever, are some of your best friends, particularly if you're still managing, you know, family, you're cooking for a number of people still. So that, right? So number one. Number two, fresh, always have on hand if you can, fresh herbs. Spices, they tend not to be fresh, right? They're dried by nature. But the best information when we look at science, and which I do every day, and you two probably do as well, when you look deeply at science to see where the best information is in food, some of the best food information, the most robust representation of all that we need, will be in your herbs and spices. And if you want to drill down into which might be the best herbs, just think about Mediterranean herbs. Okay. That would like, you know, your thyme, your rosemary, oregano. A note on oregano, if you want to differentiate and probably get the best of the best of the best, then Mexican oregano, which is often dried, should be a staple because it has its ability to talk to your genes at so many different levels. It's in a class of its own, which is interesting, isn't it?
Oh, I had no idea. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, you know, when you build ingredient and nutrient toolkits and you're training clinicians and chefs around the world, you're looking at a lot of information about food and databases. And so Mexican, oregano is in a class of its own, which is interesting. So crucifers, herbs, they will talk to your genes probably better than any other food on the planet. So those are important. Number three, when you have, this is citrus season, right? In the Northern Hemisphere, this is when we get the great oranges and the grapefruit and lemons and limes to get out of our southern state, you know, south of your border. But for us in North America, so in Arizona, California, Texas, was one other place. But this is citrus season. So try, and I don't always do this, that if you're going to use citrus, to use the zest. Even if the recipe says 1 tablespoon of fresh lemon juice, use fresh. But most of the information that our genes respond to is actually in the zest, in that peel. So zest, and even if you don't use that in the recipe, put it aside. You can throw it in anything. The information that talks to your genes is there. And so some of the bioactives you're looking at, particularly in your oranges, would be things like naringenin or tangretin and hesperidin. And so these are big words. But what I find interesting about this is when you're in Southern Europe or you're in longevity zones, my parents lived in Portugal, they now live in Spain, but the citrus is falling off the trees and rotting. They have so much. Mm. So these fruits are resident in their diets, whether they love them or not, they do love them. They're robust. And yet you also see in these longevity zones, lower incidences of cognitive diseases, right? Like Alzheimer's, right. Early onset dementia. I think we romanticize that a bit, but you know, we do know epidemiologically this to be true. Well, guess what? The naringenin, the tangretin, and the hesperidin, these bioactives that are resident in the zest of these orange citrus, have also been associated with preventing or offsetting the formation of those amyloid plaques, the tau tangles that would be associated with dementia and Alzheimer's. So this is not cause and effect, right? But it is, we've seen some pretty good science there. And obviously you have to, you know, live a less stressful life and eat a robust diet, but you can see that we often throw out the peels, and yet there's information.
I was just going to say, Amanda, oh my gosh, it just makes me so sad. Like, I started collecting peels, like, because we have oranges all the time and everybody in the family loves their oranges. And, you know, there's just so many orange peels in the compost. And it's like, no, yeah. I'm collecting these. I'm putting them in the freezer. And then I've done, like, you know, our own home cleaning solution with vinegar and the orange peel.
There you go.
And
yeah.
Boiling water and, like, just different things, because I know they're so important. Like, they have so many active compounds that, like, to throw them away and just, like, discard them. You know, you buy supplements where you're buying this stuff in a pill form, and it's like, you've got it right there in your food. Let's, like, use that food
exactly.
More.
Well, and it's a really good point, because this got me thinking about this week. I was, you know, working with a client, and this client was taking, you know, from a very, very good supplement company, 3 supplements that were really targeting his vasculature, because there's a history. I don't want to go too much into history, but I'm like, so I'm looking at these supplements thinking, why are you taking these? And sure enough, in the supplements, there was these bioactives, right? And maybe there was a pomegranate extract or something. I'm like, oh, this is easy. All we're going to do is get rid of the supplements. You're going to take, you're either going to eat pomegranate, or we've got a very good, brilliant from Greece, actually. The company's called Milestone. In case any of your listeners are interested, but this is a company that produces probably some of the best olive oil in the world. It's for drinking.
Oh,
it's not for cooking. It's a functional food, and a pomegranate extract. And I said, well, all you're going to do is get rid of those supplements. We're going to bring in the olive oil. You're going to increase your oranges in your diet. Use this as, and if you're not going to eat pomegranates, because they're not good year round, and we don't want the juice, you know, unless you're going to juice it yourself, then we can use this extra. It's a food-based extra. Bingo. That's what we're going to do for your vasculature. Okay? So we're going to use food, but it goes back to the naringenin, like we're going to use the information in the peels.
Yeah.
Of citrus. That includes lemons and limes, but the oranges are where we have most of the information with related to the vasculature. And then the fourth, I'm going to have to think of my fifth, but the fourth thing is, and this will speak to both of your hearts, is do not skip on the legumes. Actually, I thought of the fifth. No, so the fourth is legumes. Mm-hmm. I don't care what they are and which they are. We folate is probably, which is vitamin B9, is probably one of the most important nutrients in our body. And it's not that it's more important than anything else. It's just, it's so integral to driving a process called methylation, which you won't get into. But a lot of times we're told, oh, folate, eat your foliage, right? Your leafy greens. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
They're a good source of folate. But the best sources of folate truly would be your legumes. And if you want like the best of the best, in my opinion, so lentils, any lentil would be great. And your chickpeas or garbanzo beans, I think they're not in the class of their own. They're just maybe slightly at a higher level. And they're also robust in other nutrients. So those are your kings and queens. And then the final thing I would say, and it fits into legumes, because as I, you know, troll through these databases over and over to answer what's my why and what's my ROI, don't overlook the power of edamame. So soybeans, you know, obviously grown in as optimally as we can, but, you know, the canned or the dried white soybeans or the, you know, the edamame, whether in the pods or fresh or frozen, are very, very, very powerful food sources. That would include tofu. Obviously, that's processed. But again, when I'm looking at how can I trim somebody's grocery list, how can I help them make the choices that are going to, you know, get the best return on ingestion, these would be two very, you know, don't overlook soy. In its fresh, best form, is very, very, very powerful for your biochemistry and for your genes. It has a huge reach, more than I had myself really understood until doing some more recent research. So, you know, skipping the green peas and choosing edamame or trying to slip them in is a really, really good idea. Very, very powerful. So there's your five.
And there's two more. There's two or three more that I remember in the chef in Kate's demonstration, the culinary masterclass, was sesame seeds and sunflower seeds and ground flax seeds.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. So we're told, you know, eat your nuts and seeds. They're good for you. They really are. They're incredibly powerful. And I'm building a new, I told you before we came live or on this recording, that I'm coming up with a new ingredient toolbox. And yes, sesame seeds, flax seeds, and sunflower seeds really are superstars, because we don't want to take food away at all. But we also want to help people say, gosh, you know, food's expensive. If I'm going to invest in a nut or a seed, where can I get the most mileage out of what I'm eating? And without a doubt, sesame seeds and flax seeds have huge mileage. They cover a lot of nutrients, which is what we want, right? And sunflower seeds are right up there. They sit right in that class. I would also say pistachio as well, if you're looking at the kings and queens, which are just beautiful, but they can be expensive, right? So we want to help people understand that, you know, you don't have to be exclusive with food. But yes, things like sesame, flax, and sunflower give you a lot of mileage, particularly sesame and sunflower seeds. So yeah.
Sounds like our pantry. I think we're on the right track, Sandra.
That's right.
And we've learned something over the years.
Our son loves pistachio nuts. Like, he's constantly eating those. Like, I buy two or three packs every time we shop, and he's just, and I'm like, I know that they're good, so that's good.
Yeah,
well, and
good.
It's interesting how, I don't know where you guys are, but how with the pistachio, we've seen over the more recent years, how they've almost become like potato chips. Now they've got different flavors, right? I don't know what you guys, you know, they can, we have like chili roasted ones, which are really delicious. But again, they can be a little expensive. There's nothing wrong with buying the raw ones or just the plain roasted, right? And they're delicious too, just like cashews. So.
Absolutely.
Oh, totally. Oh my goodness. Wow. This is such rich information. This is such a, so there's so much packed into this. Just like the food that you're talking about, right?
Yes, exactly.
We have a question that we ask all of our guests. Rob, is that something you want to ask?
It's something I think I know the answer to already. I can picture it based on everything you've said. But if you're going to a potluck or you're coming to our house for dinner, what would you bring?
So let me ask this with a preface. So, you know, I was a military wife for a long time, and not anymore, but it was a wonderful life. And I learned, you know, growing up in Europe, I didn't know what a potluck was. I mean, we didn't have them. I can remember. So I started going to these military potlucks. I'm like, oh, So what I bring to a potluck, are you ready, is something I'll eat. So in case there's anything else there, I'm like, whoa, wait.
But yeah, good right? Idea.
So protect your taste buds and make sure you don't go hungry. But that's but there's been, I've been to some great potlucks. But, you know, a lot of times I will actually bring something like a slaw, a salad or a slaw that's fulfilling, but some other people can experiment with, because a lot of times those are missing at potlucks, you know, something that's fresh or, yeah. You know, if it's a salad, it's like something coming out of a bag and it's inevitably like a Caesar salad mix or something. So mm-hmm. I will bring oftentimes a big fresh salad so other people can enjoy it, but I can too. And there'll always be herbs in there. So yeah, it sounds boring, but it's not. It's creative. Yeah.
It's exactly what I pictured. A big salad with all the cruciferous and the nuts and seeds and yeah, some citrus herbs. Fruit and herbs and all that.
Yeah.
We've got a friend of ours. This is kind of an interesting little aside, but it reminded me of her when you were talking about the fresh herbs. She's from Morocco, grew up in Morocco, and she lives on Vancouver Island where we are now, and she's runs a business as a Moroccan chef. And she still imports, or when she goes back to Morocco, she fills a suitcase full of all the herbs and spices that she buys at the markets in Morocco. So, and she swears by it. I mean, she won't use anything else. The food she makes is incredible. Mm-hmm. And the flavors and the freshness, and it's, you know, I get it when you're explaining, you know, how important that stuff is. And it made me think of her, but it works.
Yeah. And, you know, you think of their markets in Morocco, I mean, or Turkey, they're incredible. And, you know, there's you made me think when you talked about her, and I can imagine her suitcase. So Otto Lange, the great chef, did an incredible short series. I think it was called like the Mediterranean Feast or something like that. But I think he went to Morocco. It was either Morocco. So North Africa, maybe it's Tunisia. Morocco, Turkey, and Israel. And it was incredible because you always started at the markets and the food, you know, can you imagine the aroma of those markets? How amazing that is. I mean, we have beautiful markets in North America, but they're not culturally diverse, like a completely different culture, right? And that food is an amazing series, you know, from fresh seafood to the curries or whatever. But I can only imagine your friend's dishes, how beautiful they are if they feature spices from that region.
I'll send you her her Instagram page. You can look at some of the stuff she's made. It's it's pretty
right
awesome.
In the kitchen. No kidding. Exactly. Fantastic.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you so much, Amanda. This has been just amazing information and really a lively discussion. And thank you so much for spending your valuable time and helping us and our listeners to learn more about nutrigenomics and just learn more about how we can use our food to fuel ourselves and make us feel better and healthier and know we're doing something really good. So Rob, do you have any other questions?
No questions, but just, I really appreciate you joining us and sharing your years of wisdom by the sounds of it. It's amazing information and it's fascinating hearing about everything you've done. It's, I think it will be really useful because you put it into practical kind of terms for people. There was some big words, but it all kind of makes sense and you brought it all back to sort of simple practical terms. So I think it'll be really helpful for everyone. And thanks again for joining us.
Thanks. It was great being on and chatting with both of you.
Oh,
right on.
Amanda, we just have to ask in the show notes, we're going to have a lot of the links that I'm going to link to your book. And also, where can people find you if they want more information? Where can they find you on social or in your website or where?
Basically, it's going to be the same handle. So genomickitchen.com. And then our Instagram and Facebook is Genomic Kitchen or at Genomic Kitchen. And LinkedIn, not anyone is going to go over there. That's actually my name, Amanda Archibald. So
perfect. Yes. Awesome. And Rob, was that it then?
That is it. Yeah.
Okay.
That's all we got for you this time.
No, I just wanted to make sure we're covering all the bases so that, I'm really excited about the listeners hearing this. And it's just been a wealth of information. And thank you so much, Amanda. And we look forward to sharing your salad with us.
Thank you.
One day. All right. I will see you online in more of those master classes. And I so appreciate all of the work you're doing, the pioneering work. It's just changing the world. Really appreciate
it. Thank you. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Thanks,
all right.
Amanda.
Cheers.
Wow. What an interview, eh?
Yeah.
Oh my God. How our food talks to genes and acts on genes and how it turns genes on and off, and what we eat actually matters and can really impact our health.
Yeah. It's such a fascinating topic. And, you know, we really covered a lot of ground. There wasn't just the genomic stuff, but I found the first part of the interview when we were just talking about kind of her upbringing in Europe and how food is such a priority compared to, you know, how we look at food in North America and other parts of the world. I never thought about that before, you know, what a difference there is. And it really does impact how our health is and, you know, how we look at food. And so that was interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of a discussion we have in our groups when we look at why we eat and how our environment and our social and cultural ways in North America kind of are against our health in terms of just our busyness of life and how we're in this diet culture of food rules and how we should eat and how we should feed our family and how much protein we should get. And all those things are part of the difference in the culture from here and Europe and other places in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So interesting. But I love the take-home message. I mean, part of the take-home message that she had was something that we say all the time. And those really important foods to include most days are the cruciferous.
Yeah, exactly.
The legumes.
Mm-hmm.
Hummus is a great one because it's the chickpeas mixed with the sesame seed paste, which is tahini. And that combination is like powerhouse.
I actually made hummus right after we recorded this.
Oh, so delicious.
Yeah.
And it was spicy. So good. Yeah. And then also oranges and citrus and leafy greens, like a spring mix. So it's all in there, and we talk about all those things most episodes, so I love that she reiterated it and said how important it is for a detoxification system in our body and help turn on those important genes for having the processes work in our body more efficiently.
Yeah, exactly. Something else she mentioned too that I wanted to just sort of reiterate, I think she said something along the lines of questioning what food does to our body. And instead of just, you know, using food as, gas to get from A to B, you know, what is that gas doing inside of our body? And we sort of like brought up the idea that, you know, health is more than just the number on the scale and what you look like in the mirror. And we got to use food for more than just our weight loss goal or our health goal, you know, like we have to use it, or we have to recognize that it does more to our body than just, you know, help us lose weight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. It's more than just fuel. And, you know, that's part of the whole thing with food too, is like food is such a integral part of life. It's pleasure and social and cultural and taste. And then if you're eating foods that actually you're turning on certain genes in your body to detoxify your system. Wow, isn't that amazing, you know, to use food in that way. And it's like the return on ingestion.
Yeah, I love that.
The ROI. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it was so wonderful to talk with Amanda. And I look forward to talking to her again. And I can't wait to meet her in person.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Just the whole concept of being able to have a blueprint to determine what you need. You know, it sounds like a no-brainer. So to be interesting to see where that moves, you know, where that's at 10 years from now, if it's a standard place kind of thing, or, you know, it'd be cool if we could all get that kind of information. It seems super helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. All right. Well, if you want more information on this, we will put some links in the show notes, link you up with Amanda's website. She's got a book out. She's got all sorts of stuff. So we'll be sure to connect you with everything you need to know in that realm.
The Genomic Kitchen is Amanda Archibald's book.
Yeah, there you go. And don't forget to check out our website. We've got new stuff coming up there all the time. It's mywifethedietitian.com. You can email us as well, your questions, comments, ideas for the show, that sort of thing. And the email address is mywifethedr@gmail.com. If you liked the show, please share it with friends, family, colleagues, neighbors, anyone who you think might benefit from hearing a little bit more about health and nutrition. It's kind of our mission here to spread the word, get everyone healthy and happy.
Also, we really love it when people get on to their podcast players and write a nice review. That really helps too, just to help other people find the show. So depending on where you're listening, it could be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, could be YouTube. So any of those places, it would be great for you to leave a review and give us a 5-star rating. That's helpful too.
Yeah, you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. We're pretty active on there these days as well. So feel free to leave us a comment on those pages and a rating if you can. That would be super helpful. So that is it for this week. We will be back on Wednesday with our nutrition nuggets. So until then, have a great week, everyone.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks for joining us today on My Wife, the Dietitian. If you like what you heard, don't be shy. Leave us a comment or review and be sure to share our podcast with your friends. If you'd like to hear more, hit that subscribe button. You can also follow us on our social media pages for updates, episode trailers, and other odds and ends. For more info and links on what we discussed on today's episode, check the show notes. We'll be back next week with another informative and fun-filled episode.